Hi, and welcome to the Authentic Communicator. I'm Kira Pogi Brevka, and I'm so happy that you stopped by our little corner of the internet today because my guest today has been a huge inspiration to me for years, and I'm so thrilled that she's here to share her story with each and every one of you. So Lisa Dono Glasner is an incredible, wonderful woman. She studied at Columbia University and Harvard Law. She worked in corporate law for many years before taking a beautiful, daring, and authentic leap into the next chapter. And I don't want to spoil any of that, so I'll let her tell you the story. But she is an entrepreneur more than one time over. She's opened many successful businesses. She has an incredible blog, so we'll dive into some of that. And she's also a Disney fan, so we connect there for sure. She's a genuine, generous, and warm person who I'm just so grateful to know. And on top of all of that, she's a wonderful mom to two beautiful boys. So you're basically Wonder Woman. Lisa, thank you so much for being here and for sharing your story.
Thank you so much for having me. That was a beautiful introduction. Thank you so much.
Oh, I'm so grateful. So I'd love to start. I know there's so many chapters of our lives. I'd love to start in the chapter where you were still in corporate law and what made you take that leap to move into something completely different, because I know for a lot of people listening who are maybe dreaming of doing that one day, they feel really stuck where they are. And the dream is just that, it's a dream that they'll talk about at the dinner table or with their friends, but never take action on. And you took action, which is incredibly courageous. And so I'd love to have you tell that story.
Yeah, no, that's a big, big question and the only place to start, right? And I'm just going to assume that setting aside your beautiful introduction, people are kind of coming in fresh on me and my story. So I'll start from scratch, if you'll bear with me. You know, up until 8 years ago, 2016, I was a corporate attorney in big law, practicing in New York and then outside of D.C., specializing in mergers and acquisitions. And I had come by that. The phrase by accident is probably way too extreme, but I think I was sort of on an externally determined path starting in grade school, like many a gifted girl in the 80s and 90s, right? Focused probably much more on what I could conquer next than what I should be doing and felt connected with doing. And so that took me from, you know, grade school to, like you mentioned, Columbia University for my undergrad, where I majored in political science with a minor in Japanese, and then on to Harvard Law. And then after those 3 years, practiced mergers and acquisitions at a phenomenal firm in New York City, and then another great firm outside of Washington, D.C., before making the exit that we're going to be talking about today. You know, we're hard on ourselves when we talk about, you know, this need for external validation and hits of dopamine and things like that. But I think we also need to be a little bit kind to ourselves and remembering that we were raised by a very different generation as well. And, you know, I was raised by a father who taught me that I was lucky to have work. And, you know, it not in such harsh words, but almost that you need to earn the space that you're taking up in this world. And that if you have certain gifts, you should be using them accordingly. And, you know, just as an anecdote, you know, to drive that point home, I remember returning from my maternity leave very shortly after having my first son. Mm-hmm. And I was immediately thrown onto this huge deal. I was working very, very long hours, you know, going from the lovely time together that I had with him during maternity leave to quite the opposite. And my dad was helping out with childcare at the time. And I remember getting a call late at night one night, basically finding out that the next week was going to be not a great one as far as work-life balance, to say the least. And I was crying in my room over it. I remember my father coming in and, you know, not to make him sound too hard, he was just from a different generation. And he looked at me and he said, "Be grateful that you have a job." You know, and so that's sort of the message that got hammered home to us so often. And I don't think that they were wrong so much about the gratitude. Sure. I think the gratitude was exactly right. Maybe just needed a little bit of fine tuning on how we exercise that gratitude. And don't get me wrong, like I found things I loved about law when I was studying law. I love the academic side of law. I love the human nature, the window into human nature that we get in studying law. But the day-to-day reality of that life is very, very different. If you're in it and you're listening to this, you know it's a sort of culture of misery that we all sort of buy into together and join in loyally together. And you start to not remember that there are other ways of being. You know, and I was supporting us completely. I was, I had at this, you know, at this point in things, I had two children, I had a mortgage, I had a husband I was putting through school. And at a certain point, you just kind of have to put blinders on and stop daydreaming and know that the bills have to get paid. And, mm-hmm. And you found a good way to do that. And like I said, you should be grateful for that. But I think I always knew that the comfort that I was getting out of that life was at a price that I wasn't willing to pay forever. You know, my husband used to ask what I was, you know, what I wanted to do instead, like what my daydream was. And I said, honestly, like my daydream at this point is just to have a little bit of space to figure out who I am again and to organically grow into whatever it is that I'm supposed to be doing. And in the midst of all of this, my father, who I've been talking about up until now, was diagnosed with acute myeloid leukemia. My second son, my younger son, was 4 months old when it happened, and 10 months of absolute hell started at that time. And then, you know, the other big part of my life started, which was running. I started distance running just as a way to cope with that part of my life. Like I said, I had two small children. I had a mortgage. I had, you know, this crazy job that I was holding down to support us and put my husband through school. And all of a sudden my father was diagnosed with leukemia and the house of cards kind of fell down. And I sat down to do my daily meditation one day because I had all my little self-care tools and my body said, oh no, oh no, we are not sitting still right now. And I just started running just out of a lack of anything else to do with that energy at that time. And I think through the distance running, my mind started to tiptoe into these places where it hadn't felt safe to go before. You know, you're putting your body into this exercise that allows your mind to kind of wander and storytell and explore. And running got me through that time when my father was sick. And then after we lost my dad 10 months later, I kept running. And my mind kept sort of diving into these places that hadn't felt safe before. And we literally put a date on the calendar. At one point it was 6 months out at that time, we put a date on the calendar, for me to leave. And then I spent the 6 months between then and that date, not only economically and financially preparing for that big change, but also preparing for that huge psychological shift, because I knew that while law wasn't the thing that I was supposed to be doing, it was a huge part of my identity. It was how I spent every day of my life for, you know, more than a decade. And so we spent that time from the time that we put the date on the calendar until the date when I finally put my notice in with the firm, just emotionally preparing for that time. And I think I don't give myself enough credit now. I didn't give myself enough credit even then of like what a ballsy move it was to be walking away from, you know, this Harvard Law M&A career that I had spent, you know, so many years earning and doing and gaining expertise in, and just being like, oh, sure, I'm going to go find my purpose. You know, and it's funny, I was listening to, I had the Today Show on this morning while the kids were having breakfast, and they just happened to be talking about big life changes. And Hoda said, she likened it to being repotted, like a plant being repotted. And she says, you know, you're sort of pulled out of the soil. And the hope is that you're going to be planted again into more nourishing soil where you belong. But in the meantime, there's this sort of very exposed, you know, unsupported period, like shock to the system of being lifted out of where you were. And like this panic moment of, oh my gosh, like what's next before you settle down into the next thing. And just knowing that shock to the system, which I recently experienced again, we'll talk about when I left the candle company I was running, is a very real thing. And I think you need to be ready for that and know that like that period of time is going to happen, and not panic during that time.
Yeah, I think what what you just said and what you said earlier about like taking some time in between, like when your husband was asking you, what do you want to do next? And you're like, I don't even know, because I need to like detox from the negative space that I'm in and kind of I find that new space. I think a lot of people who have been in a corporate environment, when you talk about like a culture of misery, where you're like, who's the busiest? Who didn't sleep? Like, how little sleep did you get last night? And it's kind of like you bond over these things that are really terrible for your soul, because we're all just like in it together, but also slowly dying inside. So I think it's important for people to know, if they're like taking that step away, to take the time in between, because it really does stay with you. Like when I left, even when I was working for myself, my husband at one point, he's like, why are you staying up so late? Like, you don't need to do that anymore. He's like, you're in control. And I'm like, you're right. But I was just in the habit of doing it in the corporate space. So it was like hard to let go of that. And what was that process like for you, like the detox?
So detox is 1,000% the same word that I use. And I think going into it, for me, I was hyper aware that one of the biggest challenges would be throwing myself into anything again to that extent. Like, you know, whether it, the things I had secretly dreamt about my whole life, writing, photography, like the things that I really wanted to be giving all of my time to that I loved so much, I knew myself at least well enough coming out of law to know that it was going to be hard to give myself to anything again. Because like I said, I did love things about law. I mean, I talk about the story and I'm honest with myself and know that it was sort of an externally defined process to some extent that got me from grade school to Harvard Law. Like, I was conquering and seeking validation. You know, all those things were true. But I also loved a lot of things about law. I loved the academics of law. I loved Harvard. I'm a lifetime learner. I loved everything about the academic side of law. And I saw how that had changed and how, like you said, we're the same, right? The nature of giving your all to something, like how that can sort of be used against you in a way and sort of milk you for all that you're worth. And I think like detoxing from just the idea of work being something that sucks from you instead of something that fulfills you was going to be a big part of my process. And I think one of the most interesting things, the partners that I worked with were so, so smart. And when I had to put in notice initially with my firm, it took hours of arguing with the partnership over the decision.
That's a testament to you, though. I mean, that's a huge compliment.
Yeah, I mean, I'll take it as such. But yeah. They were so smart, because one of the main partners that was so clever that I would spend so much of my time working with suggested emphatically that I take a 6-week sabbatical instead. He said, take 6 weeks. You're going to be miserable, Lisa, and then you can come back. Like, what you think you want, you don't. Like, just take your 6 weeks, be whatever. And I knew it enough at least at that point to say, no, if it's not a clean break, I'm not mentally going to make the shift.
Right.
I mean, I think in the back of my mind, I knew I had an escape hatch that I could always go back if I needed to. But I knew I needed a clean break of it not being sabbatical with a set return date for me to mentally start to go through this process that I needed to go through. Sure. And he was so, so smart, because in looking back, that novelty, that, oh, I'm going to finally purge my house and sit and write, and I'm going to sit on my couch and read a book, which I still, to this day, I don't think I've done. At least not how I pictured it. All of those sort of novel things about this new life that you're diving into start to taper off after about 6 weeks. And that's when you start to think, I don't have a purpose anymore. At least I'm not quite sure what it is. I mean, setting aside, yes, I'm a mother and a wife and all these other things, but like, right, career-wise. He was so smart looking back to suggest that 6-week sabbatical, because that's right around when the novelty starts to wear off and you start to realize the reality of needing to reconnect with who you are and what drives you, and the fact that whether or not you're fulfilled at the end of the day is fully, when you put your head on the pillow, is like fully determined by you. Those are scary things. And so I'll just say, like, to anybody who's thinking about going through the process, one of the things that I learned the most in retrospect was how smart that partner was to have made that suggestion and how happy I am that I didn't take him up on it.
Yeah, I think a follow-up question for that for me would be, there may be, like, it sounds like you had a clear voice in your head saying, no, okay, I need the break. But for some people, they might take that advice because they might have more fear about moving forward. And that seems like, okay, maybe that's more logical. I'll just take some time off, figure it out. What would you say to someone who, whether it's a coworker or family or friends, being like, you're crazy, what are you doing? Like, you have this job, you're making good money. Like, why would you take this step away? What would you tell people about how to kind of tune into their own intuition and what they really need? Because I think it can be very overwhelming. And usually those people do really care about us. They're not trying to, like, squash our dreams, but they're looking at it from a different perspective. And I think often it comes from a place of love. But how do we kind of say, okay, zero that out for a minute and, like, really listen to myself?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, 99% of the time, absolutely, it comes from a place of love. They're worried about us, right? Like, nobody wants to see their child or their sibling or, you know, step off a cliff into the unknown. Right. But, you know, their desire to protect you has to be set aside to a certain extent. And you need to recognize, this sounds so corny, but fear, like, what? Why are you so afraid? Is it because it matters? Like, for me, that's what it was. For every time I'm scared, it's because I'm finally doing the thing that really matters to me. Mm. Like, if you're not scared, then it probably doesn't matter enough for you for it to be the thing that you're spending your time on.
That's so good.
It's so true, though. It's so true. Mm-hmm. You know, and I had, and it depends on where you're at. Like, I gave all of myself to a certain type of career for an amount of time that allowed me a little bit of a cushion in transitioning. I was, the job itself was very rough, but, you know, we were in a good financial position because of what the job was. And so I was able to, like I said, literally put a date on my calendar for when notice was going in, roughly, and work up to that time, both financially and psychologically. For you, if, you know, a lot of people might not be in a position to, like, buy themselves that period of organic growth and nothing else. But what you can do is go home and spend 15 minutes of your time developing the skill set that you love, and that will exponentially grow into something else. And I think that's what it's so easy to forget when you're caught up in corporate culture, is that, like, money is just an exchange of energy for a skill set that you develop. And so whether you're doing that in work as a corporate lawyer or doing that in work as a photographer, if you can develop a skill set that's valuable to other people, that will create money, that will create living, that will, you know, and so you just need to trust yourself enough to know that if you give yourself the time to grow in the field that you love, that you'll get to a point where you can sustain yourself with it.
Yeah, I think that's really, really good advice. I think for those of you who are listening, if you have fears around what you're thinking about, to really take Lisa's advice to heart, because I think at the end of the day, what helps me to think about too is if you don't follow your advice and you keep kind of living into the fear of not moving forward, then someday that fear becomes regret, because you didn't take the leap or you didn't move into a heart-centered space rather than kind of living in that space of drained energy and nervousness and fear. So I think that's hard for a lot of people to, like, give themselves time and space to listen to where that path should go. But I love the idea of even the 15 minutes, because it's so true. Like, not everybody has the opportunity to say, I'm going to take 3 or 6 months and, like, figure this out. But we all have 15 or 20 minutes in a day to kind of give ourselves, even if it's in the shower, like, just a quiet space where it's, like, just you, or running, like you said, like a meditative practice.
Yeah. And I mean, I think we're talking about two different things that are both really, really important. The time spent literally being bored, like giving your mind a chance to wander. I think that is beyond critical. And I think for me, it's distance running. And I came upon that absolutely by mistake. Like I said, my dad was, very unwell. I was dealing with an incredibly, incredibly difficult time in my life, and my feet just started hitting the pavement because sitting still hurt too much. Mm-hmm. And it was through that running, unbeknownst to me, that I found the mental space that I was talking about to kind of let my mind start to wander. And I think, like, it's boredom in some sense. It's, for me, it's running, but for you, it might be needlepoint or paying bills or whatever it is that, like, you can put your body kind of on autopilot and let your mind wander. It's not paying bills. But, you know, it might be gardening, it might be running, it might be knitting, whatever it is that, like, keeps your mind busy, your hands busy, your body busy so that your mind can wander, is so important. People talk about meditation, but any of those things can be a meditation. So I think that's part of the time that you need. But I think the other part of the time that you need is just time to give yourself to develop the skill sets that you're really interested in. So those are two separate things. And the thing that I like to remind myself of, and if you're a high-functioning, successful corporate person right now who dreams of something else, like, all of the energy and skill and that you're putting into this job that you hate, imagine how good you'd be at putting all of that energy into something that you love. Like, the amount of time and energy and effort that I put into my world as a corporate lawyer, like, if I had put every minute of that energy into photography, I'd be the best in the world. You know, like, that's where your energy should be. Like, that's where the empowering part is, right? To say, like, oh my gosh, I'm so hardworking. I'm so, like, take all of that, like, inner strength that you've developed in, like, seeking the external validation since you were little, and put that into, like, what you're really passionate about. And, like, that's where the magic happens.
I think, and that's, it's such good advice. It's, I feel like you need a TED talk on, like, just that little capsule, because I think it's so powerful to say, because I think people, I know I didn't for a long time, I didn't think about it like that. Like, the way that you said that, I'll probably write on a sticky note and put somewhere in my house, because it's, I'll just say it again for people, but the idea that you're already putting time and energy and effort into something that you're not enjoying. So what happens when you channel all of that into something you love? And if it's something you love and you're passionate about, it's just going to go tenfold anyway, because right, you're going to get even more excited about it.
Right. And like we said, that might be 15 minutes today, right, you know, but if it's 15 minutes every day for the next month, like, that's going to get you somewhere. And it's part of it's going to get you is the confidence to keep going. Right. So dip your toe in it if you can't, like, wholesale leave yet.
Was that kind of how it felt with the blog? Now, I know you said, like, you're kind of a natural writer, like, that's a heart space for you. When you started the blog, was it something that you said, okay, I'm going to do this because I love running and I love writing and we'll just see where it goes? Was it kind of open-ended to the future? Or did you have kind of a goal and a vision?
I think I just knew that, and I didn't start the blog like out the gate. I started the blog like very shortly after. It wasn't quite as raw, but I think I started the blog because I knew that whatever was next, I was going to want to have a record of what had happened in the meantime, and that record was not only going to be valuable to me. I was not the only person in my firm who felt the way I felt about my day-to-day life. And I wanted to share, like, what the process of going through what I was going through was like. So I kind of knew that no matter what was next, you know, this record of it that was taking place via the blog was going to be an important sort of underlying element of all of it.
Right.
And it's still
Did you expect it to have the impact that it does? Because your following now is huge, and it's not just in the running space. I mean, there's like Disney Run Family, which is a whole community in and of mm-hmm. itself. But I'm sure, I know I reached out to you when you shared your story, and I'm sure other people did too. Did you expect it to have such a deep impact on people when you were sharing what you went through?
I don't think I knew what to expect. I think I knew to a certain extent, more so early on again than now when my move feels a little bit more natural, that if I was able to, I know we're going to talk about the word authenticity a lot later, but if I was able to like really authentically share what this process was like, that it would be of value to a lot of people. You know, and I remember writing an article, I think it's literally titled Why I Left Big Law and Moved to Disney World, which is the funny way of putting what I did. And it went absolutely viral overnight to all the right people who needed to see this story. So I think I hoped that I could be honest enough in my telling that it would reach the people that it should.
When you started telling that story, and we're, you know, talking about authenticity, when you started telling that story and writing, I mean, deeply personal, sharing deeply personal things that some people might be nervous to share or say, oh, well, I'm writing about my life, so do I have to censor it? Or like you said, you wanted to share really honestly. Was there ever any fear when you said, okay, it's time, I wrote this, I'm going to publish it, the world is going to see it? Like, was there any fear, or were you really confident in what you were doing? And if there was fear, how did you get over that?
So I'll be very honest in saying that I'm better at sharing after I've processed than during the processing.
That's fair.
And so I think I give myself that grace. Like I'm not great at coming to the world before I've kind of mentally tied a bow on something. Not that neatly, but I think I'm very good at looking back honestly on myself and sharing that openly. And that's not something that I've ever hesitated to do. You know, I think sharing, you'd asked me this question outside of this conversation in a different way once. And I think I'll put it into the photography lens for me because I think it might be a more useful way of framing this for people, because I think the early stages of any creative act might be one of the earliest times. Like when I first started dabbling in photography, I shared very openly because you don't know what you don't know yet.
Yeah.
At that stage, you know, you're enthusiastic. You probably got some natural talent. That's why you're into it to begin with, right? Like you might have a good eye. You might have a good eye for composition. And you really don't know the critical stuff yet to be judging yourself. So that's like kind of the easy part. The hard part is right after that. The hard part is that middle place where you're starting to learn, but you're also hyper aware of the level of expertise that surrounds you and the enormity of what you don't know yet. And like, that's when imposter syndrome kicks in. And that's the hard part for me. And I think for most people. And I think like it catches people off guard because you do expect that very early initial stage to be the hard part. And when you kind of cruise past that and you hit a blocking point, like it feels like it's all you, it's all about you. And it's, but it's not, it's that you have finally started to learn enough to know that you don't know everything. And sharing through that is the really hard part. If you can push past that, you're golden, but that's the hard part, in my opinion.
So I know we're talking about like photography as an example of that. But I wonder if we could talk about the candles, because I think that's another great example where you kind of you had an idea and you dove into something that was completely unknown and kind of used that background of loving to learn an entire new skill. But I've never, and I mean this very genuinely, like the magic that you did with the scents is next level to me. I know it's chemistry, but I'm like, it's not. It's like so much more special than that. Yeah. Because for those of you who are listening, Lisa created a whole series of candles that smelled like different areas in the Disney parks and resorts. And you had this beautiful design around them so that they weren't overt to people who were not necessarily Disney fans. But if you were a Disney fan, it just like spoke to your heart. And during that like tough corporate time, I can't tell you how many of the land candles I would turn on the music, the guitar music on a loop, and light the candle and like smell tomato leaves and be like, okay, I'm going to be okay. They were just incredibly transportive, but you started from, I mean, had you ever, you'd never made a candle before, right? You just
dove No.
in and learned that skill and then provided it to people who really needed it.
Yeah, I mean, I'll start just by with some humility and saying I think most people could get good at most things, mm-hmm. given the time. It's just what you choose to do with your time. So I'll take a dose of humility on that front with gratitude. But no, I think, you know, like I said before, when I was talking about leaving law, one of the things that I knew was going to be really hard for me was giving myself to anything in the way that I gave myself to law. Time-wise, career-wise, whatever, because I had paid such a price for it in law. And so part of this whole process for me is just having the guts to kind of throw myself into something new, whether it's my forever or not. Like, just that process is a skill set that I know I need to work on. And you know, like so many of us, you know, you have ideas all the time for potential businesses and things that you might want to run with. And, you know, 9 times out of 10, they might fall by the wayside because of time, or the idea goes away, or something else takes over. And you kind of have to trust that, like, if it's important, the universe will find somebody else to do it. Sure. But once in a while, you pick up something and you run with it. And candles, honestly, to start, was just something like that for me. I was literally in Hobby Lobby, in the glass section, and they were having one of their sales. And I was waiting for someone to help me, and there was a gentleman standing next to me, also waiting to be helped. And we started chatting, and I find out he's got a candle company, and he makes Disney-related candles. And I gave him an idea, like, that I had off the cuff, like, while we were standing there, like, oh, you should do such and such. And then, you know, we said our goodbyes. I think we took a selfie, and I went on my way. And all of a sudden, I'm like, why did I give him my idea? Never. And I hadn't thought about making a candle in my life. And all of a sudden, I'm like all upset with myself for giving away this idea. And like, all right, I'll give him a few months. And if he doesn't do it. So in the meantime, I'm like dabbling with stuff, kind of like messing around. And like everything I do, it's whole hog, right? So it's like I have to find the best wax and the best wicks and like explore mm-hmm. all the scents and the vessels and all of the things. So long story short, this man never uses my idea. And I'm like, okay, I'll try to sell a few candles. And at the time, it felt like just a lovely way to connect with my community. So like you said, I had this growing, really lovely community. But the Disney fans in my community tend to be people who don't necessarily want Mickey Mouse on their wall. They might live a very sort of corporate style life, or, you know, and want kind of a subtle way to bring the magic in without it being overt to everybody else who's in the room. And so that was my place in the market. That was my service. Like you said, like the idea of the candles were, it was your little secret that your living room smelled like the Contemporary Lobby or Pirates of the Caribbean or anything else. Because all somebody walking in would see who wasn't a Disney fan was a beautiful candle that was making your house smell really nice. Mm-hmm. And so like the magic was sort of a secret, which was my favorite thing about it. And if somebody walked in who got it, then you knew they were your people. And I loved everything about creating them. I loved designing them. I loved perfecting them. I loved photographing them, of course. I loved writing, you know, the descriptions and figuring out like the best way to package them so that when they reached your doorstep, you would know that we were on the same page. I loved all of those things. And so I threw myself into creating this line of candles. And then when COVID hit, shortly after launching, they had been doing very well initially. And then when COVID hit, they blew up. And all of a sudden, I had this huge candle company that I was running sort of by mistake a little bit. And I loved them, but the day-to-day reality of running this physical product company, mm-hmm. Both from a waste perspective, just seeing sort of the consumable product reality of seeing what was going through my home and out the door every day, you know, and also just this sort of reality of the lack of creativity in running a line like that from day to day. And my days were spent sourcing product and figuring out how to, replace waxes that were, you know, out, and dealing with shipping issues and overseeing production. Like it was a very different process in the reality of the day to day than the creative initial stage. And I can work through anything. If I'm supposed to be working through it, I can nose to the grindstone anything. But I wasn't doing it. I wasn't doing the things that I knew I should be doing to grow the company. Mm-hmm. And I think after a while I had to accept that I wasn't doing it because in my heart I knew I wasn't supposed to be doing it. And the reason that I was still doing it was because people loved them. And I didn't want to take them away. And I still would love to find a way to still have them in the world without me living, like, you know, 14 hours a day producing them. But I think one of the things that I've had to accept over time is that sometimes you have to disappoint people in little ways in order to serve them in the way that you're supposed to be serving them. And so it broke my heart to stop the candle company because I knew they meant a lot to a lot of people, but I also knew that I wasn't supposed to be serving them by producing them and that there were bigger ways that I wanted to be serving my community. Because like I said, initially it was supposed to be a way to connect with them. And then all of a sudden I'm not writing, I'm not doing photography, I'm not like talking to them because I'm too busy making their candles. And, you know, and that wasn't the point. That just wasn't the point. And so what I've tried to transition to, what I'm working to fully transition to is using my photography in a way to serve them in the same way. And so I now have a site called Thousand Circles that specializes based in basically fine art Disney photography. So it's aspects of Disney, beautiful things in the park that, again, like you can hang a canvas on your wall and you wouldn't necessarily know that it was taken at the Japan Pavilion in Epcot unless you knew it was taken at the Japan Pavilion in Epcot and that means something to you. And so for so many reasons that I mentioned, from the fact that it's not a consumable product to obviously so much more importantly that it's what I feel like I should be doing with my time, I'm trying to serve my community now in a way that uses the skill set that I know I'm supposed to be using.
And I remember when you brought it up at Momentum, when you kind of stood up and said, like, I'm kind of moving away from the candles into this new journey, that I thought it was, again, like so inspiring and so courageous and so brave. And I know that you say, like, if those shifts feel so natural to you, but I do think it's very courageous because you're taking something that is successful and you're saying, okay, but my heart's over here and I'm going to follow my heart because life is short and I'm going to find my purpose and be joyful in what I'm doing and still serve people in the same type of way. I just find that incredibly, incredibly inspiring. And I think you're very smart for being that self-aware also and like following that intuition. And for the community, I will say, like, being one of the community members, when we found out about it, one of the things I loved about your community was how people reacted to it. They were like, I will miss the candles, but I'm so happy for you because you're doing what's best for you. And so I feel like that's also a testament to the community you built because it's a group of people who really care about you as well. It's not just the candles. So when you said that, they were like, oh, you know what? It'll be fine. What are you doing next? Like, we'll just support you in whatever the next thing is. And I thought that was really beautiful.
Yeah. I mean, I think, yeah, people were wonderful. I mean, there wasn't a single person. There really wasn't who was unkind about it. And I think that's a good reminder too. Like, people are stronger than we give them credit for too. Mm-hmm. And I think like that's, when you talk about like disappointing people in small ways to serve them in bigger ways. I mean, that's a lovely thought and a lovely intention. But the other reality of it is that, like, generally people are going to be, they're not that fixated on you. Like, my father, God bless him, used to, you know, have a lovely way of saying that, like nobody cares that much about you except, like, you and, like, your immediate family and best friend. Like, nobody's going to be, like, people will get on with their lives and it's okay. Like, it's okay. Like, you almost have to give people like the benefit of the doubt. Like, okay, like you make a great candle, but like life goes on. Like, just, it, you know, or you've And you can apply that to almost anything, right? Like, you feel like you're stuck in this job that you don't want to leave because you're an indispensable cog in this machine. You're not. You're not. It's okay. Like, it's okay to take a step back and figure out what makes you feel happy and fulfilled so that you can do that for the rest of the world. Like, you owe yourself and everybody else that.
Can I ask what that trigger was for you? Like, obviously you've mentioned kind of the day-to-day in Candles you were starting to realize wasn't fulfilling some of the creative things that you love to do, connecting with your community. But how did you choose photography? I know it's something that you love, but what was the thing that said, okay, I don't want to do this anymore. I'm going to go to photography.
It's always been photography.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think I didn't know, but I think I knew. I mean, I walked around, you know, Italy on a family trip at 14 with a disposable camera, taking every black and white picture I could. Like, that was, and writing, like, writing and photography are, they're the things that, they're when I hit a flow state. Mm-hmm. And I've been doing portrait work and fine art photography right alongside Candles this whole time. And I honestly think there were a couple of factors to take a step back. Because I was doing a lot of photography around the time that I launched Core Memory. Mm-hmm. And a couple of things happened that kind of, Core Memory being my candle company for anyone new to it. And there were a couple of things that sort of veered me toward candles. First of all, COVID. The company blew up because of COVID. And also my husband was not working very much because of COVID. We didn't have a lot of money coming in on that end of things. And so I suddenly had this incredible candle business that was serving the community beautifully because everybody was having to cancel their Disney trips. And bringing the candles home was like this incredible way to stay connected in a very sort of, scent is a very primal connection to things. And, you know, being able to provide that to people, especially when the parks were closed during COVID, was a huge, huge thing. And really kind of shifted my attention away from the photography work that I was doing for all of the obvious reasons. There really wasn't much out and about fine art photography, much less portrait work happening in those early days. Sure. Also, being very honest with myself, like that little hump that I talked about where you kind of hit that mid-level of expertise enough to know what mm-hmm. you don't know, I was right around there when COVID kicked in with photography, I think. And so I'm not that surprised that I leaned into candles instead. And getting away and getting back to it. Like I said, I think there's just the being honest with myself over a period of time, knowing that like I was well aware of the things that I needed to be doing to grow the company and I was not doing them. And that's not like me. So there was something going on. And then there was the much more practical end of it is that I had a wonderful girl who was helping me with a lot of the day-to-day stuff, the production and shipping, just some of the hands-on day-to-day stuff. She was a senior in high school who would come over and just work with me during the day, and she was wonderful. I'd worked with her for a long time, and she'd gotten really, really good, and she was going to college. And so I was kind of at this point where I was like, all right, do I lean harder into this thing that I know in my heart is not how I'm supposed to be spending my time and like retrain another person and dig my heels deeper into this process? Or do I just take this as my sign to close shop and move forward? And so that was ended up being what I did. And I announced that the shop was closing at the beginning of that August, last August, sold 75% of my inventory that day. And then went through and I just tried to do it the right way. So anybody who needed product, I got them product. I spent the next month making candles and shipping them out the door. My house was covered in orders. But I just tried to do it right. But yeah, just I knew in my heart that it was the right thing. And mm-hmm. then when Lily, the woman who was helping me, the girl who was helping me, was leaving, it was like, all right, this is an S or get off the pot kind of moment. And I got off the pot.
When you when you die. It's okay. This is authentic. We don't have to. Well, you too might censor it. I don't know. But yeah. So I love that so much when you are now looking at photography and in your day to day, have you found that it brings you that joy and fulfillment that you were looking for when you made the switch? Like in your, when you're doing a shoot or when you're processing the photos, or when someone gets one for the first time and you get feedback, like does the whole process kind of bring you that joy now?
It does. I mean, I'm not going to write off the fear and the challenges and knowing what you don't know and the imposter syndrome. They're all real things. You know, it's not like I wake up in the morning and feel fulfilled because my title is photographer and not lawyer or candle maker now. Mm-hmm. But I know when I hit those flow states, like I know when I'm in a portrait session with, you know, a high school graduate who is in a gown at the Grand Floridian and twirling and then, you know, and I'm on my back taking her pictures and her father's on the side crying his eyes out. Like I know there's no question in my mind that I'm doing the right thing. I think when I'm not doing the right thing, I'm hyper, hyper aware of my mortality. And I think when I am doing the right thing, I don't think about it so much. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Like that's so beautiful. And I feel that deep
inside. And that sums it up more than anything else I could. It's not like every moment of my life is joyful now that I'm doing the thing or have given myself permission to give myself to the thing that I feel like I should be doing with my time in my life. But that like I don't have the anxiety that I had before about my limited time here. And I think that's the biggest sign of all, right? That you're doing the right thing.
Yeah. I think that's a huge takeaway too for anybody who's listening is to try to hear that or if you feel that anxiety to take a step back and ask a question why it's there. Because if you feel like you're wasting your, and I don't want to say wasting because I know like we all have to have jobs and we all have to pay our bills and we all, but if you feel like your time is ticking and you're not really doing what you love, it's okay to take a step back and ask, how do I get to the place where I'm doing what I love? So I'm not in that constant state of anxiety or worried about, well, what if tomorrow doesn't come and yeah. I never got to do it?
I mean, your body will tell you if you're not listening to your mind, 1,000%, your body will tell you. You know, whether it's with migraine headaches or panic attacks or, you know, I talked before about how I started distance running because my father was sick because it hurt too much to stand still. I mean, the universe knew what I needed, you know, and I just leaned into it. And I think it's the same thing now. I didn't talk about it before, but like last spring when I was in the thick of the candle stuff and knew I had to make a decision because I was losing my help, and I was having full-on panic attacks at points during last spring. If you've had one, you know you don't need many, but I had a couple last spring, and I have no doubt looking back that it was a physical manifestation of knowing that I wasn't in the right place.
Yeah, absolutely. Stress and anxiety and everything, it mm-hmm. impacts our health, impacts our sleep, it impacts everything. Mm-hmm. And I think just listening to your heart, your mind, your body, it's so important. When you kind of launched this new photography company, I feel like Disney is kind of a through line in a lot of things, right? Like it's part of your running. It's not everything, but it's like a mm-hmm. huge part of the running blog. It definitely was a huge part of the candles, mm-hmm. but it's also a portion of your photography because obviously you do the portraits, but a lot of the portraits happen at Disney too because it's other people who find that, you know, they walk into this space and their soul takes a deep breath and they're like, okay, this is where I'm supposed to be. Mm-hmm. So it's been kind of a through line. I'd love for you to share how you came up with the name for your photography business. Because I know where it comes from and I know it's very important to both of us, but why was it so important for you to name it Thousand Circles?
So yeah, it's called Thousand Circles. Both my portrait work and my fine art photography are under that. And thousandcircles.com is where my my fine artwork is. And it's an Illuminations reference. So beginning another thousand circles around the sun is a line from Illuminations. And that was my heart nighttime show at Disney. I think we share that. So that reference just being, again, it's like core memory was, right? The whole idea is to quietly evoke these beautiful parts of Disney without it being overt. So there's no mouse or Main Street or, you know, obviously Disney or pixie dust in my names. It's more just these quiet nods. And it all goes back to what I was just talking about, like that awareness of our mortality and knowing that you only have a certain number of weeks on this earth to be doing the things that you're doing. And then that thousand circles around the sun concept of time passing was all very much at the forefront of my mind when I was transitioning from candles to photography full time.
Yeah, it's so, so beautiful. I think there's, when I read that the first time you shared the website, I like teared up immediately because I heard it in my head, like the music. and then I felt it right here. But I feel like that your ability, whether it be with the candles or in your writing, like in the blog, but also in the little sheets of paper you put in the candles, which I saved with everyone. I still have them. And also in just in the name, the fact that you have that ability to evoke a feeling is the best form of storytelling. Like that's what Disney does best. And you do it very, very well. And I think it's because it's authentic to you. Like it moves you and it moves the people that understand that. So your tribe reads it and they immediately know, like, wow, that hit a nerve in the best way.
That's always the hope.
Yeah, but just like your ability to evoke with just a few simple lines. I remember the first candle I got was Burning Rome because my sisters and I were always like in Spaceship Earth. And I've heard you talk about this before, but I totally would do it too. Like in certain areas of the park when we're there, I'm just like, take a moment, breathe it in, be very intentional about being present so that you can like capture this core memory, like capture this moment. And I remember reading like Breathe and Be Home at the end of your writing. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wow, like she gets it. She just understands why we're so, all of us are so obsessed. But you evoke that with your photography too. You know, I love the one that you took in Spaceship Earth in the garage.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people who are not in the Disney space might not know what it is, but it's beautiful photography. And if you know what it is, it's like immediately transported me. You know, we were in a conference room outside of Disney. I'm looking at it with you and I'm like, I'm there. Like in that moment, I look at it and it brings me back to memories with my family and sitting next to my mom and on the ride and having these conversations. But that's the power of what you do. It's just incredible. And I think it's because it comes from such an authentic place that it serves other people so powerfully. So now, what does authenticity mean to you? And I'm going to stop crying.
No, but this is like what you hope for, right? Like in like this is authenticity. Like you just define it. Like it's like what comes. Like this is the product of it, right? It's like it's this willingness. And it's something I aim for every day. I'm not perfect at it by any stretch of the imagination, but it's this willingness to just show up as you, not people pleasing, right? Not calibrating your words or your actions at all to like what the people around you, what you think they want. And it's such a hard time to do that because everything about social media and like what's in our face all the time is all external validation. It's all numbers coming from other people. And like, I think we're so prone to like measure ourselves or calibrate ourselves, whether you're content creating or doing a portrait session or, creating a podcast to like calibrate your content and your words to what you think people want to hear. And authenticity, you know, it's become such a buzzword these days, but at its core, it's just like it's facing that fear that we keep talking about, right? Of like showing up as the person that you actually are, allowing yourself to be judged, you know, allowing yourself to be disliked by people who don't know you, so who cares? In order to meaningfully connect with your people. So, you know, it's the only path to that. Because otherwise, you know, if you go to bed tonight and all you did all day was we thought other people wanted, and you got a positive response for it, well, that doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean anything about you. And it doesn't mean anything about the people who liked it either. But like if you're willing to show up and just authentically and vulnerably be yourself, 1,010%, allowing your people to find you. Like how are they supposed to find you if you're not showing them who you are?
That's so true.
They can't read your mind. They're not in there as much as we wish that they could. And you're going to alienate other people in that process. Because if you're leaning into your own audience as much as you should be, you're going to alienate or polarize people who aren't your people.
Yeah.
And that's okay. That's okay too. So yeah, I mean, it's tough. It's really, really hard. I'm far from perfect. But I can tell like from how I feel when my head hits the pillow, like at the end of the day, whether or not I've done it.
I love that. And I think it's really good advice. I mean, it's good advice for anybody, but I think it's great advice too for younger people, because I know, and I talk about this with almost everybody, but you know, I really love the fact that I grew up without social media and then it became a tool in college and career. But if you're growing up with it and it's kind of in your face every day, high school, junior high, all that stuff is hard enough, right? And now having that extra layer is really difficult. If you're a young person listening, and I'm so passionate about this, what you just said, Lisa, about finding your tribe, that's like true at any age. So if you're feeling not accepted because of something that you're passionate about or an interest that you have, or I think a lot of people feel alone, especially at that age. They're like, I was total band geek, total theater nerd. Like that was me. And I'm like, you're not actually alone. It's just you haven't found your people. And the minute you show up as yourself, they will appear. And all of a sudden you'll have this tribe that just gets you. And what you said about like the more you hide it, the more you also remove the opportunity to meet those people who become your friends, your colleagues, and these heart-centered relationships. So I think that's if you're younger or older, and it doesn't matter, any age, if you're listening to this and you feel at all that you've kind of shaped your experience based on what other people need or that external validation, which is okay because we all do it at some point. Like it's just natural. To give yourself the freedom and space to just be who you are, because that's the most beautiful version of all of us when we're being authentic.
Yeah, it's amazing because we have these incredible microphones now through social media to be ourselves and let our people find us. But there's this big hurdle to leap over initially, especially for younger people. I can't even imagine. It's so hard being a teenager. I can't imagine having to do it with everything now. But, you know, the quantifiable, like, external dopamine hit, you know, aspect of all of it is terrible. And the great part of it is that if you are able to really be yourself, then, like, you have this incredible microphone now for your people to find you. So I would hope that we can be growing up or raising our kids to be using it in that way instead. Once they're using it at all. They shouldn't be using it until they're 18.
I know. I feel the same way.
I'm only kidding. I have two boys who are not using it yet, so. I'll keep that going as long as possible.
It's hard though, right? Because it's also part of school too. Like my niece is 7. She has a Chromebook as like part of her curriculum. Like they come home and they do stuff on the Chromebook. And I'm like, gosh, when I was 7, I still had like crayons and we had baby chickens in the kindergarten classroom. Like, it was just very different. And not that one or the other is bad or not, but I just think the pressure is very different than what we dealt with. And it's so important.
Yeah, it's a tough time, but yeah, there's so many incredible tools. We just have to use them right. So we'll see.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for taking the time. I know we're just like coming up to our hour. Thank you for taking the time. Thank you for sharing your story. And thank you for being so authentic because it changes people's lives. Like you had a podcast with Julie Vorez talking about this and your split from law. And in it, you talk about also moving to Florida. And I believe it was a rabbi was like gave you permission. Right. Yeah. Like technically, not necessarily, but she's like, I'm going to be your voice of permission.
Yeah.
And this was before I think we had like I had reached out to you about a couple of things on Facebook, but this was before we ever met. You were my voice of permission when I was going through like corporate crisis. I remember this like so vividly, the moment. It was during COVID, but I listened to that podcast 3 times. And I woke up like in a row and I woke up and I was like, looked at my husband and I was like, something has to change. And these incredible women who don't even know that I'm like sitting over here sobbing have given me permission to take that step. So I thank you for that because you were such a huge piece of it, even though you didn't know. and I thank you even more for sharing the story vulnerably today, because I hope that it helps anyone who's listening.
Well, I mean, I think sometimes you just need to hear other people talking about having done it to know you're not crazy for dreaming about it, whether it's walking away from corporate law or moving to Disney World or, you know, Lou Mangiello and I, who has a great, you know, obviously great podcast, WW Radio. We did a Moving to Disney show. And to this day, I think it's his most downloaded show ever. Because of the same exact thing, right? Because it sounds like nuts until like a few other people talk about it. And you're like, oh, I'm not the only person with that little dream. And you can move forward with it. So, yeah, just share your mess out loud. You know, it doesn't have to be perfect for – don't deny the world you. That's all. That's my message.
Before we go, can you share with our listeners where they can find you and connect with you?
Absolutely. Thank you. The initial blog, which is where I recount all of this, is The Castle Run, thecastlerun.com. And you can follow me day to day on Instagram at The Castle Runner on Instagram. And my photography business is thousandcircles.com. And you can contact me through portrait work through that as well.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Lisa.
Thank you so much, Kira. This was awesome.